Hello again, welcome back to the Shmona Prakim. This is Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs of Atid and Web Yeshiva. We are nearing in on the end, if for no other reason than the semester is drawing to a close in a couple of weeks, and I'd very much like to finish the Shmona Prakim before the end of the semester. Towards that goal, we're going to try to cover quite a bit of ground tonight. The sixth and seventh chapters are quite short. The sixth chapter is, I wouldn't say parenthetical, but is very much a creature unto itself and deals with a particular problem that the Rambam was faced with. In talking about virtues and the perfection of the soul and the refinement of character, the Rambam is aware of a particular problem that has been dealt with by those that came before him, and which he feels it's necessary to weigh in on, and that is this question of Hefresh ben ha-me'uleh v'ha-moshel b'nafsho, the difference between someone who is me'uleh, someone who is superior, someone who has no, what we might say, has no yetzer hara. Somebody who doesn't desire to do something wrong versus somebody that exercises self-control, ha-moshel b'nafsho, ha-kovesh et yitzro. Is it better, all things being equal, of course, it's better not to sin. Someone who does not sin is always better than someone who sins. But there are two type of people that don't sin. There are people that don't sin because they don't have any desire, they don't have any notion, they're not in any way tempted by sin. It doesn't occur to them to sin. And then there are other people who don't sin because they control themselves, because they exercise self-control, they defeat the Yetzer Hara, they don't give in to temptation. There are two type of people that go to shul and don't talk Lashon Hara. Those that, it doesn't occur to them to say something bad. There are such people. They're hard to come by. And then there are people that somehow manage not to say Lashon Hara. There are certain people that end up doing the right thing. Which is better? Which is superior? The Rambam says, Amru philosophim, the philosophers have said, Sha'moshel b'nafsho, the person that exercises self-control, Af al pi she'yaaseh ha'maasim ha'mu'ulim, even though he ends up doing the same superior acts, the result is the same. Neither one nor the other ends up doing the sin. But the one who is tempted but yet controls himself, Harei hu oseh ha-tovot, v'hu mit'aveh l'maaseh ha-ra'ot, u'mishtokek lahem, hu niftal im yitzro, he wrestles with his desires, he overcomes his inclinations, he desires to do bad things, and yet somehow manages to pull it off that he does the right thing. Umitnaged b'maaseihu l'ma sheyiruhu elav kochov v'ta'avato u'tchunat nafsho v'hu oseh ha'tovot v'hu mitzta'er aval ha'me'uleh, but someone who doesn't even have the desire to begin with, harei hu nimshach b'maaseihu achar ma Shir'ehu, elav tavato utchunato, v'yasa hatovot v'hu mit'aveh u'mishtokek lahem. But the person that doesn't even have the desire to do something bad, he desires only the good, so out comes the good. ובהסכמה מן הפילוסופים שהמעולה יותר טוב ויותר שלם מן המושל בנפשו. And the consensus among the philosophic opinions is that the virtuous person, the person that doesn't desire to do bad in the first place, is superior to the one that controls himself, who desires to do the wrong thing, does the right thing because he can control himself. Aval amru, efshar she'amod ha-moshel benafsho, b'makom she'amule omed b'harbe min ha-dvarim, u'madregato p'chuta b'hechrech, li'oto mitave lefol hara, afal pi shelo yifalehu, aval tshukato lo, hi tchuna ra'a b'nefesh. So why is, if neither of them do the wrong thing, if they both end up doing the right thing, what difference does it make? What difference does it make if you don't tell Lashon Hara and I don't tell Lashon Hara? But you don't tell Lashon Hara because it never occurred to you to say something bad about someone else. And I didn't tell Lashon Hara, even though I really enjoy it, because I controlled myself. Don't we look at the result? In both cases, looking just at the result, we're identical. Neither of us are speakers of Lashon Hara. Neither of us are violators of Shabbat. You, because it wouldn't occur to you to violate Shabbat. And me, even though I have a lot of temptations, I overcome those temptations. So what's the difference? Let's just look at the bottom result, the bottom line, and what difference does it make? So the Rambam points out, again, the Rambam is not giving you his view yet. He's presenting a philosophical position which exists, that the person that overcomes his evil desires, obviously somebody who has evil desires and succumbs to them, that's a different category. But somebody that overcomes his evil desires, that in and of itself is an indication of a flaw. So that the Rambam, again, is telegraphing to us a particular position that exists in the world, that's a problem, that somehow lessens your accomplishment because in the first place you had these desires to do that which is wrong or that which is forbidden or that which is morally problematic. Right, but the very desire itself is a negative spiritual trait. He says, "Ukvar amar Shlomo kiyotze baze amar nefesh pasuk in Mishlei nefesh rasha yiftara." The soul of the wicked desires the wrong. The very desire itself for the wrong, even if you overcome it, and certainly if you don't, but even if you overcome it, the very desire itself is problematic. So the Rambam points out that this philosophical position is supported by a verse in Mishlei, in Proverbs. V'amar b'simchata me'uleh b'maseh atovot v'itzta'er mish eno me'uleh b'asiyatan zeh ha'ma'amar. Simcha letzadik asot mishpat, umchita lefoalei oven. That the righteous, the tzadik, the person who doesn't even desire to do wrong, that is his simcha. Hare ze ma sheyire midivrei haTorah hamatim lema shezachru hafilosofim. So we see that this philosophical position can even be supported by certain psukim. Now, the Rambam is certainly aware that psukim can be cited, particularly when we're talking about these kinds of ethical or philosophical notions. You have to be very careful. Everybody can pull a pasuk, a verse, out of their sleeve to support many different sides of an argument. But then the Rambam says, and he goes on, that there's a different way of looking at it. There's a different way of looking at it, and it depends on what it is that we're talking about. Hold on a second. I'm going to look at what this chat says. There is, however, as somebody points out in the chat, there is a different point of view. There is an orientation which Chazal quotes that says that the person who struggles with his inclinations, as long as he comes out doing the correct thing, is in many ways superior. Now, the Rambam only cites certain examples, but can anybody think of statements of Chazal that seem to support this idea that the very struggle with the Yetzer Hara, the very struggle with negative inclinations itself is a source of superiority? Or does anybody want to defend that position just from their own point of view, regardless of Chazal per se, or regardless of... So sure, I mean, Sherry says yes. In other words, correct. That's the position that I'm trying to get someone to argue on behalf of, that those who struggle are seen to be above those who are tzaddikim naturally. For example, the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva. Correct, there you go, Barbara. The Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva quotes the Gemara that says that Bemkom shebal tshuva omeid, afilu tzaddikim gemurim. That in the place where a Baal Tshuva stands, or the rank that a Baal Tshuva has achieved, is in some ways even superior to that of a tzaddik gamur. That fully righteous cannot achieve, because possibly one interpretation of that, in light of what we see here, is the idea, because a Baal Tshuva, somebody who knows what it means to sin, well, he's tasted that the forbidden fruit, and he knows what it is, and there's always that temptation, but overcoming that itself becomes the source of strength. The idea that God is nearer to the brokenhearted, that he's the rofei l'shvurei lev, I'm not sure that that's brokenhearted. That's something else. That has nothing to do with temptation to sin. That has to do with the fact that God tries to be a support to those that are suffering. That's a different issue altogether, I think. But this idea that kol hagadol mechaveru yitzro gadol mimenu, says the Rambam, the bigger you are, the bigger your temptation, and therefore the ability to overcome temptation itself is a source of greatness. What's that? Let me see. So the Rambam is aware that there's this contradiction even within our tradition as to who is superior. Is it better to not be tempted at all, or is it better to withstand temptation? Is it better to withstand temptation? Does anybody want to weigh in on a personal thought on that matter? We've been quoting other ideas, but does anybody have their own opinion on the matter? And of course, I'd be very happy to turn the microphone on. Sherry, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that. Sherry, do you have a microphone? And receive Torah. Chani, what you see, so you're arguing that the tzaddikim are greater than the those that struggle with temptation. Is that what you're saying, Chani? Oh, I see, Sherry. Sherry's referring to this idea, the Gemara, the Midrash about the giving of the Torah, that the angels made an argument that they should receive the Torah, and God says, "Well, that's the short of the story is that God says that's really irrelevant to you because the Torah is about containing and taming the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which is irrelevant to the angels." So that's why it's given over to human beings. Perhaps that might have some resonance to what we're talking about here. The Rambam then goes on throughout the remainder of this short chapter to answer the contradiction in the following way. It's a very Maimonidean way of looking at it. It's almost lumdus about a philosophical puzzle. He says that the kovesh et yitzro, the person that desires, the person that has an awareness of and temptation to sin, but yet overcomes that, the case in which we're talking is someone who is tempted to do bad things, which everyone accepts as bad, which society in general, which general society accepts as bad, murder, robbing, thieving, cheating, lying, things like that. The Rambam introduces the idea, which was developed originally prior to him, 150 years earlier, by Rav Sadia Gaon, that there's a difference between mitzvot sichliot and mitzvot shim'iot. Let find that here on the page. That there are here mitzvot sichliot, from seichel, from wisdom or intelligence, innate intelligence. That there are certain mitzvot. This idea that we can break the mitzvot into different categories is well known to us. That we can divide the mitzvot between mitzvot aseh and mitzvot lo taseh. There are 613 mitzvot, and they can be divided between positive commandments, things that you must do, and negative commandments, things that are prohibitions. The idea that we can divide the mitzvot between mitzvot ben Adam lechavero and mitzvot ben Adam lemakom. There are mitzvot between man and his fellow man, and a mitzvot between man and God, ritual law. Another such division is the division between mitzvot sichliot, mitzvot that are matters of seichel, matters of rational understanding, matters of common sense, mitzvot that all types of societies develop, even in the absence of divine revelation. We don't steal, the Jewish people don't steal, not because of some kind of notion in political theory about the state of nature and the social contract. This is a problem in political philosophy about what is society like in the state of nature before government was formed, and why people bandied together to accept government upon themselves. In the state of nature, there's no government, there's no organized society. It's everyone for themselves. And in this kind of theoretical explanation for how society developed, different political philosophers put forth suggestions for how it must have been that humanity, societies, civilizations, chose to be governed by laws. There were different positions. Most famously, Locke, the philosopher John Locke, and the philosopher Hobbes. The cartoon, the comic that we all loved, Calvin and Hobbes, are named. The Hobbes is named for, not by coincidence, after the philosopher Hobbes. Hobbes thought that the state of nature, man is a beast, a wild tiger that will eat you up. And the reason that people were willing to give up certain freedoms and be governed by laws was because in the state of nature it was dog eat dog, and the wild beast of humanity had to be tamed. So we give up certain freedoms and agree to be governed by laws because it's just simpler than having to worry that you're going to come and murder me and take my house. I give up my freedom, as it were, to break into your house and murder you and take your things. And we make a social contract which agrees that that neither of us will do that. And if either of us does that, then we've broken the social contract and we are subject to punishment. Because the fear of having to live, the chaos of living that way creates such a high level of unproductivity that it's not worth it to us. It's better for us to each give up certain freedoms in order to be able to live without that kind of chaos. Other philosophers said no. Other philosophers, like Locke, for example, said that it's not the fear of the chaos, it's a desire for the good, it's a desire for a higher aspiration that we aim for. But in all cases, whatever your political philosophy, whatever your notion of what the state of nature was like prior to the social contract, all societies, for one reason or another, come to a notion that it's wrong to steal, it's wrong to murder. These are the mitzvot sichliot. These are the mitzvot sichliot. And it's not just murder and robbery, it's all types of other things. It's all types of other things. Any of the mitzvot that the average intelligent, civilized society comes to, these are the mitzvot sichliot. The whole notion of tzedakah, of charity. All societies come to this notion of charity. How much charity? Who's entitled to charity? Those are things that people of good faith can disagree about and debate about. But the idea that, given that there are people, given that there's an inequality of resources, and there's certain people that need to be aided and assisted, it's the responsibility of the other people in society to help them out. These are the mitzvot sichliot. The mitzvot shim'iot from the shorash of shema, of listen, are the mitzvot that we only know about because of naseh v'nishma, because we listen to the revelation, revelatory mitzvot, things that society would never have come up with if it weren't for the fact that God told us not to do them. Shatnez, the example the Rambam gives. Not to mix wool and linen. Basar b'chalav, not to mix meat and milk. The laws of tumah and tahara, of ritual purity and ritual impurity. These are things that society, that we're not going to come up with on our own, and they're only binding on us, or they're the logic behind them is we do them because that's what God told us to do. The Rambam says this is also what we call the chukim, another division of the mitzvot into different categories, mishpatim and chukim. Mishpatim generally correlate with the mitzvot sichliot, although it's maybe talking specifically about civil law. And chukim are the things that we do just because they're Chakuk, they're engraved on the stone, they're engraved in the Torah, because that's what God said to do. So when we say that person that wants to do bad things and overcomes them, that's talking about the mitzvot sichliot, the things that society generally accepts as wrong, whether or not society believes in the Torah or accepts the Torah. Sherry asks, Shabbat, yes, Shabbat would be in the latter category. Shabbat is, we know about Shabbat, because Hashem said, God said, I created the world in 7 days, so you should work for 6 days and keep the Shabbat. But without a divine commandment, a society, we would not have come up with that on our own. When Chazal talk about when Chazal talk about the person that desires forbidden things and overcomes them, they're talking about the shimiot, the not eating non-kosher food or things of that nature, so that it's a question of what we're talking about. V'hitbonen b'chokhmatam alayam ashalom v'uvama himshilu shehu lo amar. I don't do it. A person shouldn't say, I don't, shehu lo amar. He didn't say that a person shouldn't say, I don't want to kill. Vamnam hevi dvarim kulam shemayim basar bechalav levishat shatnez v'arayot ve'elam mitzvot kiyoze behem heim shamru she asher yikren Hashem chukotai amru chukim shechakakti lecha ve'ein lecha reshut lahaher bahem. Ve'umot ha'olam meshivim alayhem ve'hasatan mekadrem alayhem kegon para aduma. People from the outside look at certain mitzvot, and it seems bizarre. It seems bizarre that we should, like, why would anybody do that? Like the Para Aduma, the prime example of a chok, the manner in which we deal with ritual purity and impurity, the red heifer. Of otana sher karun achronot sichliot yikru mitzvot. Moshe ba'arnu chachamim. Ukvar hitba'er mikol ma she'amarnu. Ilu averot yu mi shelo yishtokek aleihem yoter tov mi mi shishtokek aleihem vimshol benafsho mihem. Ve'elu mehen yu hadavar behem lehefech. Ve'ze chidush nifla. והשלמה מופלאה בין שני המאמרים, ולשון שני המאמרים מורה על אמיתת מה שבארנוהו, וכבר נמשלו כוונת זה הפרק. So that it depends who's superior. It depends on what it is that you want to do. Somebody that says, I want to rob and murder, but I don't do it, the very desire to want to rob and murder is an indication that there's something wrong with you. Certainly, if you succumb to your temptation, you're a robber and a murderer. And that's completely, we're not even talking about that category. Somebody who never stole anything in their life, but desires to steal, that's an indication of a flaw in your virtue system. So therefore, I don't steal and you don't steal. You don't steal because it doesn't occur to you to steal, because you're that kind of person. But I don't steal because I want to steal, but I control myself. Neither of us have stolen. But you are superior to me. But you are superior to me. Because my desire to steal, my desire to break the taboos of normal society is an indication that there's something wrong with my values. This is not true about the mitzvot shim'iot. If I want to, if I have a desire to eat non-kosher food, if I have a desire to eat non-kosher food, as long as I don't do it, as long as I don't transgress, but the very desire to eat non-kosher food is not inherently wrong, is not inherently immoral. As long as I can control myself, because eating meat and milk is not a is not is only problematic insofar as God said, don't do it. And the proof is that every other proper society in the world, every other non-Jewish society in the world, doesn't think there's anything wrong with that. There's nothing inherently wrong with it, like murder or stealing. So the question of who is superior, well, it depends on what we're talking about. It depends on what we're talking about, which category of mitzvot we're talking about. And that's the Rambam's answer to this question. Let me just look here in the chat. Sure, the reason why I ask about Shabbat is because almost every society has older. Notice that might be something else. I don't know. The Sherry asked about the question of Shabbat. So the Christian society has a notion of Shabbat, which originates with us. Christianity didn't come up with the idea of Shabbat, which they, of course, observe on Sunday instead of on Saturday, but that was from us. Islam doesn't have a notion of, I mean, they have a holy day, but it's not the same kind of notion that we have of a day of forbidden. Even in Christianity, the notion that on Sunday, even though they don't have a notion of melacha, of forbidden categories of work, it's still a day of rest. It's still a day where it was socially taboo to work or to engage in certain activities that violated the sanctity of the day. So I'm not sure that every society in this world has this notion, but certainly in the Christian world, the notion of Shabbat came via Judaism, and we got it as a mitzvah, shimi'it. We heard the mitzvah, and therefore we were commanded. The seventh chapter, which is also quite short, and I'd like to just kind of describe it a little bit on the outside. The seventh chapter returns to the question of prophecy. Now remember, for the Rambam, everything that we've been discussing up until now, the perfection of the soul, the refinement of the person, the attaining of virtue, of moral virtue and intellectual virtue, are all towards the goal of making one a receptacle for prophecy. The height of the perfected soul is the Navi, the prophet. And prophecy itself is something I had earlier used the metaphor of a radio receiver, that by being in tune, you are then capable of getting the transmission. Of receiving, of being collate, the transmission. So that the seventh chapter here picks up where we left off earlier, in our discussion about Nivuah, about prophecy. And the Rambam says that only through attaining the rational virtues, only by perfecting the mind, can we attain the rank of prophecy. There are the rational virtues, and there are the moral virtues. For attaining prophecy, the rational virtues are actually the more important ones, because unless you've attained shlemut, perfection, on the rational side, you can't even talk about prophecy. Now, this might be for the Rambam because the mind is the agent through which you can grasp the divine, and in so doing, become a prophet. It's not merely a question of intellectual superiority. The Rambam, you know, was often accused of being intellectually something of a snob, of being a rationalist par excellence. It's true the Rambam was a rationalist par excellence. It's true that the Rambam does place an emphasis on the intellect. But for example, in Hilchot Teshuvah, the Rambam describes who is and is not, who does and who does not merit Olam Haba, the world to come. I'm not talking about Tchiyat HaMetim. I'm not talking about the resurrection of the dead. But for the Rambam, we've discussed this in different contexts in the past, not in this series, but in other earlier series on the Rambam. For the Rambam, the ultimate reward is not the Olam HaTchiyah, the resurrected world after the Mashiach will come, but according to the Rambam, there's a subsequent stage. And that is what he calls Olam Haba, the next world, which is a world of complete disembodiment, where your soul, which is somehow synonymous with your intellect, is plugged in, as it were, to the divine knowledge. In order to merit that, you have to have an intellect which is sufficiently developed. The Rambam famously said that anyone that thinks that God has a body will not merit the world to come. The Ravid, the Rambam's great critic, says, look, of course God doesn't have a body. And anyone who thinks that God is a little old man with a white beard sitting on a throne is obviously wrong. But it's a mistake. It's not a sin or a flaw which causes someone to lose the world to come. They're mistaken, but it's not a mistake that let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Why does the Rambam think that if someone believes God is corporeal, that God has a body, he loses his share in the world to come? So it's not so much that the Rambam thought that it's a punishment. It's not a punishment for a sin, that if you think God has a body, you don't get Olam Haba. But for the Rambam, who understood Olam Haba to be your mind, your disembodied mind, plugged in to the divine knowledge, if you think God really is a little old man with a white beard, that's an indication that your mind is so insufficiently developed that it can't plug in. It's like trying to connect to high speed internet if you have an old, if you're still running. You're still running, I don't know, we have an old computer that's used really just for writing Word documents. The kids do their homework on it. It's still running Windows 95. And there's no computer program that comes out that we can run on that computer because they don't run on that operating system anymore. So if you think God is a little old man, that's an indication that your operating system is so insufficient that you can't plug in to the operating system on which God runs. Not as a punishment, just as a technical problem. You don't have enough processing speed going on to you're not up to speed. Maybe I've overworked this metaphor. So for the Rambam, in order to achieve prophecy, not everybody achieves prophecy. You can be a tzaddik without being a prophet, right? You can be a tzaddik without being a navi. You can be all types of wonderful things without achieving prophecy. But in order to achieve prophecy, you have to have your mind has to be sufficiently developed. Your rational virtues have to be in line. Your moral virtues also have to be mostly in line, almost completely in line. But any type of being out of balance on the midot. Remember the midot we talked about at great length in the beginning of the Shmona Prakim, that being in balance and finding the middle way and not going to any one extreme. So any type of deviation off the mean, any type of deviation off the balance is what the Rambam calls a mechitza, or in some other translations of the Rambam, a veil. That it creates a kind of veil between you and God. Or in the metaphor that I used earlier, it creates static. In other words, not like our new digital radios, but the old analog radios. We had to literally fine-tune the reception. So the kind of being off balance, the degree to which you're off balance in that the great balancing act of getting your midot into tune is the degree to which there's static. And if there's sufficient static on the radio, so your radio won't be able to receive the station you're trying to get into. And in the case here of the Shmona Prakim, that station is none other than divine prophecy. Divine prophecy. So if your rational virtues aren't in check, so then it's like the radio is not even plugged in. If your moral virtues, if the midot are not in balance, that's the degree to which there's going to be static on the radio station. And at a certain point, you're not going to be able to get reception. You're not going to be able to understand what the announcer has to say. And therefore, your prophecy will be cut off. That is the point of the seventh chapter of Mechitzot Ve'inyanan. That's the seventh chapter. The eighth chapter, the final chapter of the eight chapters, is the conclusion, and I hope that we will be able to accomplish that in the weeks that are left to us. So the sixth and seventh chapters we've done a little quickly. I encourage you to go back and look at them on your own. I remind you, I uploaded a rather antiquated but yet sufficient translation of the entire Shmona Prakim, which is available from Google Books, and it's on the homepage of the series, and you can download that and go through the material in English if you need to, either by way of review or to fill in on if you want to go through every word in these two chapters. And I hope that next week we'll be able to begin, and then in the subsequent weeks finish the Shmona Prakim, all eight chapters, beginning to end. So I'll stay online if anybody has any questions. If not, we will continue next week.